When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today, I'm standing on Newton Road in Bayswater, W2. Four roads west of the lovesick assailant of Barbara Shuttleworth. Two roads north of the old lady killer. Three roads east of the petty revenge of Dominic Kelly. And a short walk from the bones of the spoiled child. Coming soon to Murder Mile. Newton Road is a quiet residential street, dotted with a wealth of luxurious homes from the 1800s. All pristine white and sparklingly bright. There's no litter, no dog plop, no kids, no noise, and no dickheads soiling the street with their soulless thump of brain-dead beats. All because they want a bit of attention. Here you can expect their version of Deliveroo, called I'm Famished What What, to airlift a platter of oysters and a bottle of Bolly, the road sweeper to wear slippers to keep the noise down, and the nanny to silence the brat with the speed of a ninja. Should the posh sprock dare to interrupt Mummy's mid-afternoon snooze, having had a frightfully busy day perusing the pashminas at Lord Ashley, don't you know? 23 Newton Road looks as it did in the 1870s, being a semi-detached two-story townhouse with white stucco walls, steps up to the ground floor, and a basement which was once the scullery and the maid's quarters. On Wednesday the 24th of May 1871, a wealthy bachelor called Frederick Moon came here to the lavish home of his girlfriend Hannah Newington for dinner. They ate fine food. They drank good wine. They listened to music on the piano. And then for reasons no one could fathom, he ended up dead. But who had killed him? His girlfriend? Her lover? Himself? Or was it fate? My name is Michael. I'm your tour guide. This is Murder Mile. Episode 235. The accident, suicide or murder of Freddie Moon. Most deaths are easily explainable. A heart attack, a car accident, choking on food or falling off a wall. It should all be as self-explanatory as finding a corpse with a knife in his chest. But with Freddie being dead, his girlfriend inconsolable, and the guests and servants haven't seen nothing, this case was not. The victim's name was Frederick Graves Moon, and he was born in 1829. raised in pomp and privilege. As the younger son to Sir Francis Graham Moon, 1st Baronet, Alderman, and former Lord Mayor of London, he lived a lavish life of extreme wealth, with high expectations that he would match his father's prestige, titles, and success. By 1871, 41-year-old Freddie had become part owner of Moon Cock & Co. Brewery in Leicester, one of the premier beer and porter manufacturers in Britain, serving millions of gallons of giddy-making grog to pubs all over the country, and raking in a whopping £3,000 a year, roughly £3.3 million today. Given his financial success, his father should have been proud. But Freddie wasn't a business brain, nor a leader of men. Those who knew Freddie said he loved the idle life, being a man of easy amusements, with which he could fritter away his spare time, engage in frivolity, and squander his profits on bachelor's pleasures. As a huge fan of horse racing, Freddie was well accustomed to blowing a wad at the racetrack, having got wind that a GG called the Filly's Fancy was a dead cert, only to lose a small fortune on a nag which was destined for the glue factory. He liked fine wines and rich foods, which burdened his stout and rotund frame, with bouts of gout, attacks of bilious, and the odd burp of a rich man's wind having overindulged. But most of all, he loved beautiful women. And although he was often seen strutting about in Mayfair with a rather sparkling little lady perched upon his arm like a budgie pecking at seeds, he never married. And although the love of a good woman was never far from his mind, what made his life even more difficult was his love of unattainable women. Hannah Newington went by many names and aliases, such as Flora Newington, Flora Canning, Frances S. Canning, and Madame de Morne, which suggested a loftier upbringing as a woman who married well. In truth, she was born humbly as Hannah Fowler, a girl who came from nothing and was destined to live a life of drudgery, with too many kids on a small wage, a drunken lout as a wayward husband, and the twilight years of her early 40s, spent alone and picking oakum as a workhouse inmate. But unlike so many, for whom that would be their life, on her side she had her looks, and she used them wisely. In 1856, aged 22, Hannah married a wealthy and successful solicitor called William Newington. But they were not happy, not by a long stretch. And with him described as a solicitor of good standing, with him fleeing, for reasons unknown, to the distant shores of Australia after just 3 years of marriage, he would be gone, and she would be branded with the scandalous title of an abandoned wife. So without his permission to divorce, she could never remarry, making any relationship sinful. As a single woman, with no career and a daughter to support, Hannah did whatever she could to survive in an era where a woman had even less rights than cattle, and an unmarried divorcee was akin to the devil. Little is known about her criminal history, but it was said that Hannah was a professional con woman who used her beauty to lure in some of London's wealthiest men, who lived the high life in the city's most opulent hotels, and who dined off their fortunes by pretending to be their wife. Leaving a trail of debt across Mayfair, having left without paying, and obtaining goods by misrepresentation. In 1867, she was convicted of fraud. Having left six creditors owing £2,300, which today is just over £2.4 million. After a short stint in prison, as some of her suitors had taken pity on her, in 1871, Hannah became the paramour of Captain Davy, a retired army officer described as a strange man with a big black beard. Quite what their relationship was is uncertain. To some, she was his girlfriend. To society, she was little more than a concubine or a high-class prostitute. But to her, although they never married, she went by the title of Mrs. Davy. That year, either as a symbol of his love or as a place where he could keep an eye on her, Captain Davy rented her a three-floored townhouse at 23 Newton Road in the fashionable suburb of Bayswater. It's uncertain whether she ever loved Captain Davy, but unable to remarry and with her beauty fading, this once young, attractive girl, who was tall and elegant, had morphed into a man-sized and slightly stout 38-year-old woman of questionable morals and character, for whom time was running out. She drank to quell her fears. She ate to comfort her loneliness. And as a nervous and unpredictable woman with a severe alcohol problem, her doctor had advised her to dry out by going to a German resort. But instead, she stayed home and she drank. Hannah was a drunk, Freddie was depressed, and together, that mix would be lethal. In his final year alive, Freddie was plagued by a wealth of stresses. As a 41-year-old man, his father had pestered him to marry, as most of his siblings already had. But Freddie had no one but Hannah. An abandoned wife, a suspected prostitute, and a career criminal who was woefully unsuitable for a baronet's son. 18 months prior, his beloved mother Anne had died, and his grief had left him in an emotional funk. In the months prior, his relationship with Hannah had become even more fractious, with her shouting, "I am your wife, Freddie," only for him to retort, "No, you are not, and you never will be as long as I live." And although Freddie's friend, Captain Bowes Elliot, had suggested that Freddie use his wealth to get rid of her, spoken more out of drunken spite than genuine hate, over a lunch, Hannah was heard to spit, "By heavens, I'll have your life." And at a dinner, she supposedly said, "By Jove, I'll stab you one day." Wednesday the 24th of May 1871 was Freddie's last day alive. Being supposedly sunk in the depths of depression, some have suggested this was down to his losses at Derby Day. And although he was described as very gloomy, he only lost £10, £1,400 today. Whereas at the time of his death, he still had £1,300 in his bank account, the equivalent of £1.8 million. It could have been that Hannah had failed to keep a lunch date with him. And although she had stood him up many times before, there was a much weightier problem which was bearing down on his brain. In May 1871, the British government had proposed the introduction of the 1872 Licensing Bill. Having been largely unregulated, Parliament was shaping new laws on alcohol. Soon, it would be an offence to be drunk in public, to be drunk in charge of a horse, or to be drunk in possession of a loaded firearm. All of which affected the people, but there were new laws which affected his business as a brewery. In a few months' time, brewers could no longer add salt to the beer, which they did to make the drinker even more thirsty. All pubs were legally obliged to close at 11 p.m. and the licensing hours were to be decided by the local authority, with each borough having the right to become dry, also known as alcohol-free. As expected, the law almost caused riots among the people and the breweries themselves. And with Freddie terrified that his business would struggle to survive, this could mean the end of his brewery. It was a turbulent time for Freddie Graves Moon. And although his mental disposition was questioned in court, with his highly paid solicitor objecting to the question, his mental state remains unknown. The night itself was peaceful. The street was quiet. And being a well-to-do suburb, it was routinely patrolled by PC Rowe from late afternoon until around the time that the body was found. When he first passed, he noted all was calm. Adele Matthews, parlour maid to Mrs. Davy, as Hannah Newington was known, heard the doorbell being rang at 5 p.m. As was her role, she answered the door. She curtsied to Mr. Moon and showed this sour-faced gentleman in, as his housemaid, Mary Ann Hale, scurried downstairs to the servants' quarters. Adelaide said, "He was in the habit of coming to the house and he used to dine there. I let him in. At that time, Mrs. Davy was in the billiard room." As was protocol, I showed him into the dining room, where he would wait until the lady was ready to greet him. But instead, he went straight in. He wasn't upset, angry, or anxious. As those who saw him recalled, it was as if he'd got the weight of the world on his shoulders. By Mrs. Davy's order, I took a bottle of champagne into the billiard room, and between them, they sank a bottle of finest Bollinger. Not out of celebration, but because that's what wealthy people do. According to the staff, before dinner, Mr. Moon walked around the garden. He was alone, and being a man of wealth and privilege, it was not the place of the servants to ask if he was okay, so they didn't. At 7:30 p.m, they dined. Served by Hannah's parlourmaid, they ate soup, chicken, vegetables, an array of fresh bread, a fine selection of champagne, brandy and claret, with a sherry in an ornate cut glass decanter, complete with hand-rolled cigars, cheeses and water biscuits. But they had no fruit or dessert. That said, with Hannah not expecting Freddy that night, the dinner itself was intended for her friends, Laura Pock and Catherine Bulin. But seeing his mood, to cheer him up, she accommodated him. From what was overheard, Freddie was in a gloomy mood as he feared his brewery business was about to collapse. He had lost £10 back in the wrong horse. And he was perturbed that Hannah had an eye for other men, which for anyone else, whether inside of that room or out, that shouldn't have been a surprise. At 8:30, as Hannah and Freddie sat at the dining room table supping brandies, Adelaide cleared away the dishes, and from the table, she removed a small wicker basket of 6 bread knives to the sideboard. At around the same time, Laura Pock and Catherine Bulin, Hannah's house guests, arrived after a hard day of horse riding and taking a long lunch and a steady brunch. Olives were served, a bottle of claret was opened, and Laura and Catherine entertained them both with music on the guitar and the piano. Passing by on his beat, at roughly 9 p.m, PC Rowe said that the noise emanating from the house was a little more raucous. And although society said this seemingly respectable house was a brothel, as a working-class constable, it wasn't his position to inquire about the private habits of the upper classes. This may have been just a scandalous aspersion, but wherever Hannah went, her reputation followed. According to Adelaide, who had known Hannah and Freddie for 16 months, Mrs. Davy and Mr. Moon appeared to be on affectionate terms. She called him Fred, and he called her Flo. Although she never questioned why this supposed wife of an army captain cavorted with an incorrigible bachelor. But whatever was going on between them that night, the air was tinged with jealousy. At 9:30 p.m, Dr. Phillips arrived. As the personal physician to Mrs. Davy, he'd been seeing her on what he described as a purely professional basis for the last 6 months, with the last 6 weeks seeing her bedbound, as owing to severe alcohol problems, he had failed to get her to dry out. When Dr. Phillips was shown into the drawing room, Adelaide recalled, "I thought that by her eyes, Mrs. Davy had been crying." The doctor only stayed briefly, with Freddie not uttering a word to him, and then he left. But was Freddie ambivalent, distracted, or jealous? Fueled by champagne and liquor, it was said that Freddie was feeling perkier, and with the young girls joining them for some after-dinner fun, Catherine played the piano as Laura romped on the floor, catching a decanter of Chevy which Freddie threw into her lap. As drunken antics go, that may seem innocent enough. But 4 months before, Freddie had done the same and the decanter had smashed. At that time, he'd apologized. Only this time, before he could, Hannah had sent the young girls away, and the jubilant mood in the dining room was sullied, leaving a cold silence hanging like a dull cloud. But was Hannah drunk, angry, or upset? At 11:30 p.m, on his beat, PC Rowe passed 23 Newton Road and noticed nothing unusual. "I saw people going in and out, and I saw Marianne Hale, Mr. Moon's housemaid, enter with a letter in her hand." It was never explained what that letter was, and with it not being her job, Marianne never read it. But at the trial, William Pickford, Freddie's friend, stated.
Mrs. Davy was jealous of him. As having put his arms around Catherine Bulin, he was not allowed to be left alone with her.
And a letter read out in court suggested that Freddie enjoyed the favours of Catherine, who he knew as dear little Kitty.
According to the staff who were one floor below, and Laura and Catherine who were one floor above, at the time of the incident, they didn't hear any shouts or scuffles. Hannah and Freddie were alone, and the knife basket had been moved to the table, possibly by Dr. Phillips, who'd helped himself to a little snack. Marianne Hale recalled, "I was in the kitchen, immediately below the dining room. The first thing that attracted my attention was a fall. And then I heard a scream." Hannah rang the servant's bell and shouted, "Go for a doctor," which Adelaide did. And as Marianne went upstairs, "I saw Mr. Moon on the floor. Mrs. Davy was kneeling by his side, trying to undo his clothes, and saying she was trying to save him." A kitchen knife, missing from the breadbasket, was protruding from the left-hand side of his chest, just below his heart. With a steady pool of blood forming about his body, and a slowly decreasing pulse of red spurting from his once white shirt, it was clear that Freddie's life was ebbing away, second by second. With Hannah in a distressed state, the servants recalled, she did everything to save him. But as she sat crying and cradling his body, knowing he was dead, Catherine Bulin heard her blubber, "I fear I did it." It was as near to a confession as anyone would get. At 12:15 a.m., alerted to the scene, PC Rowe, PC Futrell, and Dr. Phillips entered 23 Newton Road. PC Rowe would state,
"I saw the deceased lying dead near the fireplace. In the drawing room, I saw Mrs. Davy sitting on the sofa. She was pulling off her jacket, and although the inside of the lining was white, it was saturated with blood."
With the partially clean knife having been removed from Freddie's motionless chest, and later found lying in the fire tender close to the body, the constable promptly arrested Hannah Newington, alias Mrs. Davy, with a customary,
"Consider yourself in custody."
And she was later charged with his murder. With no witnesses to the incident itself, the police and the jury had to rely on the testimony of several medical experts who gave their opinion based on their expertise and knowledge. William Baker, a surgeon at St. Bartholomew's Hospital, would state,
"The wound was downwards, forwards, and inwards. The weapon took one uniform direction."
And although he would state,
"It was not possible that the weapon might have been as a result of an accident."
Although he would admit he had no special experience in the cases of stabbing, he concluded,
"The wound was caused by another person."
Dr. Phillips, Hannah's physician, said the wound was 6 inches deep, and it was not possible that it was caused by him falling on the knife, which Dr. Royston also confirmed as highly improbable. But with Dr. Canton, surgeon at Charing Cross Hospital and a lecturer in anatomy, stating,
It was most probable that the wound was accidental.
Mr. Walton, a surgeon at St. Mary's, agreeing,
it might have been an accident, or possibly self-inflicted.
And Mr. Gay, chief surgeon at the Great Northern Hospital, concluding,
the wound was more explainable as an accident than as a result of a deliberate stab.
With the jury left in a state of confusion, and with fingerprints not accepted as evidence in the British legal system until 1901, they were stuck in a quandary. Was it an accident, a suicide, or a murder? Tried at the Old Bailey on the 13th of July, 1871. In a two-day trial, Hannah Newington, alias Flora Davy, pleaded not guilty to the charge of murder. With Mr. Lewis agreeing with her defence,
that the wounds may have been inflicted by Freddie in a state of abject depression.
As a married but abandoned woman who was kept by Captain Davy and was merely the mistress of Freddie Moon, as she wouldn't have financially benefited from his death, the prosecution reduced the charge to one of manslaughter, which meant, if found guilty, she would not be executed. With Dr. Parry wrapping up the defence, stating,
the prisoner and the deceased loved each other dearly. Mr. Moon was depressed, and whatever occurred was done in a moment of fear.
Having deliberated for half an hour, at 4 p.m, the jury returned with a verdict of guilty of manslaughter. The judge concluded,
she took up the knife, perhaps not anticipating the awful consequences, but she armed herself in order to meet the encounter of the deceased.
Taking into account that it was not premeditated, she was sentenced to 8 years in prison, and having fainted, she had to be carried from the dock. In her defense, Hannah stated, Freddie insulted me. When I asked him not to repeat those words, he flung a bottle at my head. I leapt up with a knife. He seized me, and we both fell down. And that, according to her, was how it happened. Sent to Woking Prison, Hannah spent the first 2 years in the prison infirmary owing to exhaustion. Having a relapse, as she'd learned that her only daughter had died, Hannah Newington was released on the 15th of September 1874, and she died in early 1913. As for Freddie Moon, owing to the scandal of his death, his name was removed from the prestigious Burke's Peerage, as well as from the brewery he had once owned.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There we go. There we go, folks. There we go. How was that? Ooh, it's a little bit quicker than usual. That's better. That's nice. That means it'll be a nicer edit as opposed to a horrible edit. Oh, what's happened? It was nice outside a little while ago. It was nice. There was some blue skies. It was lovely. It was all peaceful. Oh, there was very few aircraft flying over. There was no kids going past because the kids had gone back to school, which is a blessing for everyone, isn't it? Absolute blessing. And I was looking forward to my little walk, but now it looks like it's gone a little bit gloomy. Little bit gloomy. Anyway, I'm going to make a herbal tea. I'm going to make me a herbal tea. Make me, what type is it? It's a red berry fruit blend. Well, there we go. Does life get any more exciting than that? No, I don't think it does. Ooh, it's very damp out at the moment. It's not cold enough to put the fire on, so inside it's a little bit damp. Maybe I might put on a little fire tonight. Got my hot water bottles out, sitting here with my woolly hat on and my Albert Steptoe gloves to keep my fingers warm. But that's it. That's how exciting my life is. Cool, Michael, your life is amazing. Whoa. I wish my life was exciting as yours. Yeah, I know. What are you doing next? I'm going to the coffee shop to start the edit on this. Oh, wow. Cool, lummy. Am I going to have a cake today? Probably not. I'm still trying to stick to my diet. Still trying to be a good boy, eating my rice cakes, which are just low calorie. Having carrots. But then again, Christmas is coming around the corner. So I'm trying to get myself in a good routine of not picking out. Because otherwise, I'm just going to binge over Christmas. And I'm just going to go back to being that fat wobbly thing that Eva pokes everything. Which is no bad thing. It's no bad thing being Eva's personal poking thing. But I'm trying to be good. I think a couple of Christmases ago, I treated myself to an infamous selection of beers, which were in my bow, and people used to come around and have a look at all my beers, because I'd stockpiled them for ages. There was like 200 really, really lovely beers in there. And I just not really much of a drinker. It was a bit stupid. So I ended up drinking them slowly over the next couple of months. And then the next year, I bought 50 beers, and I was still drinking them in January. So this year, I'm going to treat myself to five or six nice beers, a good meal, something nice. Gonna do my usual thing. I always spend Christmas by myself. I like doing solo Christmas. You know, it's nice to go and visit people, but at the same time, I like my own space. So I'm visiting friends and family around Christmas. Christmas Day, probably Boxing Day. Boxing Day, I might be out at the pub. Christmas Eve, I'll be down at the pub. 28th, I'm going up to see Rich. Hello, Rich. I'll be coming up to see you. That'll be good fun. Then I'm going to go and see my brother and his family. Go and go see them. And then New Year's Eve, hooray! I go to bed early because I hate New Year's Eve. Hate New Year's Eve. I just think it's hooray, hooray. We're staying up until midnight. Whoa, wow. It's boring as shit. I always go out, I get myself a nice steak. I don't normally eat meat, but I do that day. I get some green beans, some Dauphinoise potatoes, a nice pudding. I get all the good beers. So I get Duval, I get Chimay, I get Leffe, but the ruby version. I get all the beers I wouldn't normally buy, which are all the quality stuff, and some really, really fine chocolates. And then I sit and I watch Shawshank Redemption, and then I watch Casablanca. And then I might watch another film. And then at 10 o'clock, I go to bed with my earplugs in and I say, fuck you to the world. And then in the morning, I wake up, New Year's Day, when everyone's grumbling around groggy, going, oh, my head hurts, oh, why do I drink so much? And they have a horrible day. I'm up early, having a walk around, and I feel great. And that's how you start a new year, by feeling great, not by feeling shit. So, what's that noise? Oh, it sounds like a big helicopter coming over. Fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck that fucking helicopter. Shitty helicopter. Anyway, that's Christmas coming up. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to visiting chums and having some drinks and shit. How's my tea doing? I'm going to grab my tea. I don't want it too hot, do I? Don't want it too hot. Otherwise, it will... I won't drink it, which is always what happens. Like, I make a tea here and... then we do this bit of Extra Mile. Oh, I forgot to say, welcome to Extra Mile, the unscripted, unedited bit. We do some quiz bits in a bit, and then we fill in some blanks on the episode that you've just heard. And then I piss off. I can't remember where I was going to. So, look, the sun's starting to come out again. This is great. That'll be good. That'll be helping my solar panels and... charging up my batteries. Just before I started this record, a guy went past in his boat heading south, speeding past too fast. And I went to shout at him, and I realised he looked like Harold Shipman, the serial killer. So if you're a London boater, and you're currently... I'm not going to say where I am in London, but if you see a guy on a boat who looks almost exactly like Harold Shipman, tell him to slow the fuck down. Anyway, let's do some quiz questions. I've limited it to 8 because I realise sometimes there's too many questions, but sometimes it kind of ruins the extra bit afterwards. So, quiz questions. I haven't edited this episode yet, so I may balls up some of these questions, but here goes. Let's see how it goes. Okay. Question number 1. What was Freddy's middle name? Question number 2. What was the name of Freddy's brewery? Question number 3. Name one of Hannah's aliens. Oh, sorry, I burped halfway through that question. Someone is... Someone's coming past. Are they... They are going too fast. A boat called Lucy and they're not paying attention. And they look like they're about to crash into my boat. But I don't know whether they are. I'm keeping an eye on them. Oblivious to the world. Question number 3. What was one of... Oh... Sorry, the boat just banged against the side. Question number 3. What was... name one of Hannah's aliases. So she had 1, 2, 3, 4 aliases. Name one of them. Question number 5. What was Hannah Newington's birth name? Question number 6. Where did Hannah's husband disappear to? Question number 7. How much debt had Hannah left her creditors in? Oh, sorry, that was question 6. Question 7. How much had Freddy lost on Derby Day? And question number 8. What law was due to cripple Freddy's business? Right. So, let's dive into some extra details on it. This is kind of a hard one here. This is one of those cases where you've kind of got to be a bit dubious about the information that's provided in that era at the time, because what we're really dealing with here is a crime, but at the same time, it's kind of, there's a real hierarchy between a kind of upper class and lower class. You've got so obviously working class people's details are not being taken as seriously as someone who's more upper class. We're dealing with people who've got money and prestige, so they can pay for high class lawyers. Also, we're in an era where, you know, if a woman's married, that's fine, but if she's not married or if she's divorced, core blimey, big scandal, what? So because Hannah lives in a house which is funded by her sugar daddy, or the man who keeps her, Captain Davy, and she pretends to be his wife. She says that she's Captain Davy's wife, but she's not really his wife because she's married to someone else who's buggered off. It's uncertain. It's alleged that this is the quote, a seemingly respectable house, but inside was a brothel for the upper classes. Now, we don't know that. Originally, when I started looking at this, I thought, oh, okay, it's a story about a brothel. But the more you look into it, there is no evidence that this is a brothel at all. It could just be that this is a single woman and, you know, she likes the attention of men. It doesn't mean it's a brothel. Also with her, Catherine and Laura, who are her friends, her friends tend to stay there as well. Because obviously it's a six-bedroomed house, a six-roomed house. So, you know, she's got space to have her friends in. So she's probably lonely a lot. She probably wants her friends to come over. But because there's now technically three single women in that house, therefore people start regarding it as a brothel because men turn up. But, you know, is it a brothel? Is it not brothel? We don't know. Obviously, we've got the evidence here of Adelaide Matthews, who was the parlour maid to Mrs. Davey, and Marianne Hale, who was the housemaid in service of Mr. Moon. So he turned up because this is what posh people do, isn't it? It's like they have housemaids and nannies and all that shit. And then if you're going round your mate's house, you bring your parlour maid with you. Oh, utter turds, aren't they? Probably half of the politicians we've got have that as well. Because they've got no connection to reality, no connection to the real world and real people, and yet we vote for these arseholes. Anyway, let's not get political on this one. Because these are working class women, obviously their statements aren't going to be believed that much. Also, they're not really going to turn around and go, yes, my employer did this, my employer did that. They're going to be quite honourable towards their employers because they're going to want more work, or they want a good reference afterwards, or they know they won't be believed. So this is what makes this story really, really hard to kind of work out what happened, because you've got Freddie, who's dead, then you've got Hannah, who's kind of in a state, but also she could potentially be his murderer. You've got Captain Phillips, who may potentially be a lover of Hannah's, but also may just be her doctor. But Freddie also, there's a twinge of an idea in there that Freddie was potentially jealous of Dr. Phillips, but we don't know whether there's a relationship going on. You've got Captain Davey, who is the owner of the house, who is the person who, inverted commas, is the keeper of Hannah, because she's a kept woman. So we don't know whether he knows about Freddie or not. We don't know whether Freddie knows about Captain Davey. I think it's more likely that he does, which is why it's kind of a real, really weird story that if he is jealous, he's jealous of her seeing other women, but he's like, she's seeing someone else. She's seen Captain David, but she's also married to someone else as well. And it's also likely that she probably is seeing someone else as well. So it's a real cluster F, isn't it? But what seems to have happened is it seems to be a very ordinary day. She seems to have been wanting to have dinner with her friends. So Laura and Catherine, they were invited over after they'd been horse riding. She'd prepped a meal for the three of them, but obviously because Freddie was kind of in a weird, a gloomy mood, is how everyone describes it throughout, that she seems to have done the good thing. He was clearly dispirited, low-spirited, and she was like, do you know what, I'm going to treat you to dinner. The girls can have something later on. I'm sure the parlour maids have probably prepared something for the girls as well. There's probably enough, like, sandwiches or some shit like that. Who knows? So it seems like an ordinary moment, but we don't really know what's going on in Freddie's mind. I think that's part of the big problem, is that it was questioned in court that they did say they'd already quizzed a lot about Hannah, about her upbringing and her background and her criminal record and her mood that night and the fact that she was an alcoholic and the fact that she was struggling to dry out. That was all covered. But because Freddie Moon, because he's, you know, son of a baronet and son of an alderman, son of the former Lord Mayor of London, that is a man of real privilege there. So because he's got a lot of money and power, therefore he's able to, even though he's dead, his family have hired like a selection of shitbag lawyers with lots of money who are able to just say, no, 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 we're not going to have that. And even though this is, I think this is kind of absolutely key for this case, is to work out what Freddie's mood was that night. We have kind of moments of conjecture in there when it's kind of assumed of what it could be, but we don't know the truth. We don't know what's going on in his mind. So I have kind of put everything that I know about his mood at that moment, you know, the kind of the death of his mother and possible collapse of his business and any kind of jealousy that's going on there. But we'll never know. We'll never know really what was going on in his mind that night. It could have been all of it. Could have been none of it. Could have been something else. Adelaide Matthews, the parlour maid, she said she'd been there about 16 months. She knew Hannah as Mrs. Davy. She said, "I knew the deceased. He was in the habit of coming to the house and he used to dine there. On Wednesday the 24th of May, he came to 23 Newton Road at about 5 o'clock. I let him in. At that time, Mrs. Davy was in the billiard room. I showed him into the dining room and he went straight into the billiard room. By Mrs. Davy's order, I took in a bottle of champagne to the billiard room, and before dinner, Mr. Moon walked around the garden. We don't know why he did that. He was alone. We don't know why he wanted time by himself. We don't know what's going on in his head at all. So through this, it's a bit of a messy case. So I was able to piece together everything I could about who saw what at what time. What makes it even more difficult is that everybody's timings are entirely shot to pieces. So I think one of the real problems is that we're back in an era where people don't have watches. So there's no real sense of time. Also, quite a few people in the story have been drinking, so it's hard to really pin things down. We know when certain people turn up and we know when various guests arrive because we're able to get Coot having a little bit of a moment outside. We're able to work out where people are at what point and what time they arrive at the house, but everything after that goes a bit crazy. So the servants downstairs don't have watches, obviously. They're reliant on the timings of their employers and when their employers want food. That's kind of all that's important. They're not really looking at their watch going, "Oh, I need to, when's Emmerdale on?" Do you know, that's not in their mind because obviously this is years before Emmerdale even existed. But they're all about serving. So it's about when their employers want to be served, and that's when they do it. Everything else, when they're going to go home, is entirely irrelevant because they go home when their employers are done, and that's it. But everything else goes a bit messy. So after kind of 9:30 onwards, it goes a bit messy. I've kind of put the time of the stabbing around midnight. Only because we know the timings based on PC Charles Rowe. He was doing his patrol outside on Newton Road. Not just Newton Road, but he was basically walking around Bayswater and he'd do a circuit. So he'd go past his house every hour and a half, something like that. So we know he went past around 6, around 8, around 10, around 11. He was past there about 11:30. And he was back around there about 12 o'clock, so midnight. And he entered the building at 12:15 a.m. So he wasn't alerted to anything prior to that. But the staff who were there said this happened around 10 p.m. Which just doesn't make any sense at all. It's hard to work out who's right. I'm kind of going by what the police said because that kind of makes sense. If not, then Freddie was murdered around 10 o'clock if everyone is correct who's in the house. And then they waited for 2 hours, which doesn't make any sense at all. Apparently, when the doctor turned up, that was Dr. Phillips, he turned up. Freddie had pretty much died, but he was still warm. So I think it's more likely that the murder happened just before. Doesn't seem to be premedicated. Jesus Christ. Doesn't seem to be premedicated, as you can kind of see. It's not like... it is... likely, according to what everyone said, that Hannah was the one holding the knife. I think it's unlikely. This is just my theory. I think it's unlikely that Freddie stabbed himself in the heart. Although, quite an emotional person, quite upset that she may have been cheating on him. It could have happened. It could easily have happened. We don't know about the fingerprints because, as mentioned in the episode, they weren't looking for fingerprints. Fingerprints weren't something that was used in criminal trials in the 1870s. It wasn't used in British courts until 1901. So we don't have that evidence. We can't turn around and go, "Oh, whose fingerprints is on the knife?" Because we don't know. We don't know because they weren't looking for it. It's not something they looked for. So that has to be entirely discounted. No one seems to have seen Hannah holding the knife, and no one seems to have seen Freddie holding the knife either. So that has to be discounted as well. So we don't know who was holding the knife. So it could have been that Freddie stabbed himself in the heart. Maybe he was upset at and jealous at Hannah potentially being in a relationship with Dr. Phillips. We don't know. Maybe he was angry at, as mentioned earlier on in the episode, that she wanted to marry him, but she couldn't marry him because she was married to someone else. And he said, I will never marry you. And obviously his father's having a go at him, saying, when are you going to marry someone? You're 41 years old, for fuck's sake. So we don't know. Maybe that was it. Maybe it was an accident, as Hannah said. Do you know, he had thrown a bottle at her previously, a little while ago, a decanter. She said that night, he threw a bottle at her. What's missing from the police investigation is any reference to a smashed bottle on the floor. So if he had thrown a bottle at her, you'd expect to find a bottle on the floor. But A, it may not have been registered by the police, or B, because the housemaids were there being diligent, they may have cleaned it up, and it may not have been flagged up to the police. Oh, we've cleaned this away. Do you know, it's when you look at we haven't got the police files on this. All we've got is what was reported in the press and what was reported at the Old Bailey. And the Old Bailey documentation, it's quite slight in places. So there's big chunks missing. There's pieces that I would love to know, but they're just not there. Do you know, there's little details like here. Half of the bottle of champagne was left. Very little of it was drunk. Great. Brilliant. So that kind of determines that half of the bottle was not drunk, but we know that Hannah was quite drunk, and we know that Freddie was quite drunk as well. We know that the two girls were quite drunk as well. We know that it wasn't premeditated, because the knife came from a knife basket which had been placed on the table by Adelaide, the parlour maid, and when the meal was finished, she'd put those knives, which she'd cleaned, back on the sideboard. So they were out of the way, but at some point they arrived back on the table. We don't know who had put it there, but it's likely, it is said, that it could have been Dr. Phillips treating himself to, you know, a little bit of bread while he was coming around to look at Hannah. Let's have a look. What else we got? Noisy aircraft going past. See, I don't mind it now. I'm all right. See, look, I'm all right with that. I'm all right with that because we're on extra mile. I'm not going to edit it out. I don't mind. There could be a child going past now, and I'd be like, oh, look at that, a lovely child. Ah, oh, brilliant. Yeah. Oh, isn't it angelic? I wouldn't say that, but I just wouldn't be as annoyed as if I was recording, and then I'd have to edit it out afterwards because of a bloody child, a bloody annoying child. Ugh. Oh, they're lovely. They really are. No, they're not. They're really not lovely. What else we got? Let's have a look. The letter read out in court. There was a letter read out in court. We don't know what that letter was. This is the thing about this, that the transcript papers, it's not really a transcript. It's like a really shitty overview, to be honest. So they reference the letter or a letter, but we don't know what the letter is. It's likely that it is the letter which was which stated that Freddie enjoyed favours, inverted commas, of Catherine Bulin, and that he knew her as Dear Little Kitty, which doesn't suggest they're having an affair. It could just be that they're just really good friends. We don't know. We don't know at all. As mentioned in here, it's suggestion. As for the fight itself, Hannah said they had a quarrel, but it was only a few words and not a fight. No one heard them arguing. There was the sound of a fall, but no one could kind of pinpoint exactly what it was. Hannah was the one who screamed, and then the servants entered from downstairs and the guests entered from upstairs. And then they found, obviously, Freddie on the floor with a large carving knife. They say carving knife, it's also a bread knife, protruding from his chest. It's kind of the left-hand side of the chest in and around the heart. So that's what makes it really difficult. No one really knows what's going on. When they came in, PC Futrell said he saw the deceased lying on the floor near the fireplace. There was a table with several bottles on it. On the floor, close to the body, was a bowl of water. A bowl of bloody water. It could have been that she was... So that's the thing. It looks like at some point she'd retracted the knife, which, as we know, is the worst thing he could ever do, and then was probably damping down or wiping away the blood, which kind of did no use because, you know, blood is spurting from his heart. He's going to be dead shortly enough anyway. I mean, he was never going to survive that. When he went into the drawing room, Hannah was pulling off her jacket. The inside was lined with white and was saturated with blood. The upper part of her clothing was covered in blood and her hair was disarranged. So obviously at that point, she's instantly arrested and charged with murder. But it could have just been that, you know, he stabbed himself. She went over to protect him. She pulled out the knife to help him. Blood is pouring over her. Could conceivably be done. It was said that the knife was found in the fender of the fire. So not in the fire, but kind of in the area within the fire. And it was partially cleaned. But as we've seen in cases before, when you retract a knife from a body and the body is wearing clothes or sometimes layers of clothes, the knife is going to be partially cleaned depending on where the fibres are. So, you know, you could say it's partially cleaned, or you could say as she retracted the blade, it partially cleaned itself. So we don't know. We really don't know what. Someone going past. We'll be looking up. I love that, hearing flashes of people's conversation. I have no idea what that is. No idea. We don't know whether she cleaned the knife. I think it's unlikely. I think she retracted the blade and then put it down somewhere and it partially cleaned itself. But as we saw with the autopsy, we have to be honest about this. There is no real autopsy. Back in the 1870s, there was no such thing as an autopsy. Even though we make reference to autopsies in like things like Jack the Ripper, autopsies really didn't exist until kind of the 1910s. There was a kind of cursory examination of the body. But if you go back to the Sabina Spilsbury episode, even in the 1920s, people are regarding pathology as the beastly science. Do you know, it's not highly regarded. It's not kind of like today where people are like, oh, this is a world-renowned pathologist. It's kind of what you would do was get a doctor, and if you had to, you'd get a doctor to look at the body. But they weren't really, they were focused on solving diseases and saving lives. Once someone was dead, they really didn't give a flying fuck about what happened to them. They didn't give a shit. So this was the medical kind of idea at the time. Why should we really give a crap about how someone died? Do you know, our job is to kind of save people and to solve diseases and things like that, which is why kind of the body is looked at. And you can kind of see how important, this is the other thing that annoys me about the case, you can see how important Freddie Moon is by the amount of high profile doctors who are examining the body to work out how he died. If it was a regular person like us, you get like one hired pathologist who's hired by the government at the taxpayer's expense. You wouldn't get all of these people, but because he's so rich and wealthy, you do get that. So as we can see, there's some very preeminent people here, but they can't make a decision about whether this was a suicide or a murder or an accident. There's kind of it's an evenly split across the board, which I think makes it kind of interesting, because for the trial itself, Hannah is charged with his manslaughter, but manslaughter suggests that it's kind of the weight is more on her, saying, "Well, she's responsible for this. She was holding the knife, therefore, she killed him. She didn't murder him, but she killed him." But if this is true of what she was saying, that he was screaming, he was shouting at her, he threw a bottle at her, she was in fear for her life. We're not too sure whether she picked up the blade or he picked up the blade, or he was trying to stab himself, or she grabbed the blade off him, or she picked up the blade to defend herself. There's a lot of confusion over that. We really don't know what really happened. But what they've done here is they've kind of said, well, do you know, he's the son of a baronet. He's rich and wealthy. He's got lots of great lawyers. So therefore, we'll put... I don't know. I think part of it is that she probably did. She would probably pulled the knife. She was probably upset. She's drunk. She's angry. I think they fought. I think they probably did fall on the floor, because you've heard from the witness statements from, I think it was Adelaide and actually Marianne as well, who were downstairs, and they said first they heard a thud, then they heard a scream. If they didn't hear a thud, like what was the thud? What was the thud? It could have been a body going thump on the floor. It could have been someone stamping. But a thud definitely feels like a body falling on the floor. So I think there's something close to what Hannah said was right. But should she really have been charged with his manslaughter? I don't think so. I mean, they've already said with this, they agreed with at the trial that there was not enough evidence in terms of motive. You know, she doesn't gain anything from this. In fact, she loses, because he actually funded her quite a lot. So even though she lived in a nice house that was funded by Captain Davy, Freddie was actually giving her decent amounts of money over time. So actually she lost out quite a lot from this. So it doesn't make sense that she would want to kill him. Although she could have been incredibly jealous and angry and drunk. And so this is going to be one of those ones where I don't think we can really come to a conclusion on this. I think it's going to be up to you. The law has kind of made its decision here. I think it's going to be entirely up to you what you think actually happened. But I think that is it. So, let's do the quiz questions, and then I'm going to toddle off to the coffee shop. So, question number one. What was Freddie's middle name? It was Graves. Frederick Graves Moon. What a lovely lovely name. Question number two. What was the name of Freddie's brewery? It was Moon, Cock and Co. Moon, Cock and Co. Wonderful. Question number three. What was one of Hannah's aliases? Well, she had four. You could have gone with Flora Newington, Flora Canning, Francis S. Canning and Madame de Morne. Question number four, what was Hannah's birth name? It was Hannah Fowler. Question number five, where did Hannah's husband disappear to? He went to Australia. Nah, yeah. That's what he would have spent the rest of his life doing, going, nah, yeah. Question number six. So I had a mate who's lived in Australia for about 10 years, and he came back recently, and I was like, oh, I hope he's got a really thick Australian accent. And he doesn't. His accent's still the same. And I was listening out. I was like, I'm going to hear it. There's bound to be Australian isms that you've picked up. And he was like, oh, I haven't got any Australian isms. Nah, yeah. And it's like, yeah. He kept saying nah, yeah a lot. Question number six. How much debt had Hannah left her creditors in? It was £2,300, which is just over £2.4 million today. Bloody hell. Question number seven. How much had Freddie lost on Derby Day? He'd lost £10, which is £1,400 today. And question number eight. What law was due to cripple Freddie's business? It was the 1872 licensing law. So there we go, folks. That's that. Ooh, that's me done. Hope you enjoyed that, folks. Next week, where are we now? 7th of November, I am. I think you're probably in December by then, I think. Or probably end of November. So we'll have the a three-parter to end the series with. And then there might be some Christmas things. I haven't quite decided yet, but there we go. So have yourself a good week, folks. Stay safe and be good. And thank you for supporting the show. And I hope you have a good week. Best wishes. Lots of love. Bye.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.